And welcome back to another installment of The Two Brandons. This is Brandon Thomas.
And this is Brandon Easton.
And we are back at you once again, ladies and gentlemen. This week is we've been very excited about this particular episode. I know before we promised to do a little kind of like Avengers Marvel Studios retrospective before Avengers Age of Ultron comes out, but that was before Star Wars.
Star Wars.
That was before Star Wars Celebration and everything that went down there. So we are going to temporarily postpone the Avengers episode and talk about that after we've both had a chance to see the new movie, and you'll get some thoughts about that and kind of a little more of a history with our particular hit, you know, our particular kind of how we got into the franchise, how we got into the Avengers franchise. I don't know if you did. I'm assuming you did at some
yes.
point.
But it took a while. I was not a born and bred Avengers fan.
No, me neither. Me neither. So that'll be fun. But we're gonna put that on the shelf for a little bit and talk about Star Wars Celebration. Now, you know, I know a lot of you guys probably follow us both on Facebook, and I think it was last week or a week and a half I posted something about how the new Star Wars trailer and the excitement that I was feeling for that was taking away a lot of my enthusiasm for the new Avengers movie. Right. Now, since we're right up on it, I'm going to see Avengers tomorrow. Some of that has come back, but I think that that's a perfect segue into my my experience at Star Wars Celebration this year at the Anaheim Convention Center. So I had never been to a celebration before. It was always one of those things where, you know, I would always promise myself that I would go, or I would go to the next one. And this seemed to, you know, everything kind of worked out this year where it was in Anaheim, which is not very far from me. It's only like an hour and a half drive. And, you know, as Easton knows, we talked about this a long time ago, and I was still, you know, hemming and hawing and being very
right.
kind of resistant and noncommittal. And then what happened was that they announced that J.J. Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy were going to open the show. So based on that and based on the timing, to me, that meant, oh, they have to, you know, they have to bring some new footage. You know,
absolutely.
They wouldn't be coming out in the first place if they weren't going to bring some new footage with them. And so, like the day they announced that JJ was coming out, like I bought a 1-day ticket. So I bought a ticket for the Thursday, and that's it. So leading up to that, you know, I had this what I thought was this brilliant plan about how I was going to drive out really early in the morning and get there in time for the 10 a.m. panel. But the closer we actually got to it, the more unlikely that seemed. So again, after some initial resistance, I went ahead and I bit the bullet and I got a hotel room for Wednesday night so I could potentially stand in this line with the, you know, the rest of us crazy Star Wars fans to get into this panel, right? Because I knew that they were going to simulcast the panel into other, you know, like meeting or panel rooms at the convention center. But, you know, for me, if I was going to stand in line, I wanted to actually be in the room. You know, I didn't want to just, you know, be in some room on the other side of the convention center watching it on a screen. You know, to me, that didn't make any sense. So I went ahead, I bit the bullet. I got a hotel room for Wednesday night. I drove out, you know, I made this plan about what time I was going to go and get into the line. Mind you, they started the line at 6 p.m. Wednesday evening. However, what I didn't realize until I had gotten there was that people had been waiting outside the convention center. They had created their own line since 8 a.m. that morning.
Jesus Christ.
Right. So, wow. You know, so I had this plan about how I was going to go and get in the line maybe around midnight, 1 in the morning. You know, I thought that was going to be a good spot to hit where I would still have a good chance of getting into the room. And I went by the convention center. I think it was around 6:45, and there were people streaming into the building already. And I'm like, where did all of these people come from? And they're like, oh no, they've been lining up outside on the outside of the convention center down the block since 8 a.m. this morning.
Wow.
So I ran back to my hotel room and I completely panicked and I made a whole bunch of mistakes.
What mistakes? You mentioned these mistakes. What mistakes did you make?
Okay, well, the first mistake that I made happened before I even left the house, right?
Okay.
So before I left the house, I thought, you know, maybe I should bring this little, you know, this little like beach chair, you know, that I have in the garage here. You know, it's a pretty kind of standard like fold up chair with a nice cup holder and stuff in it. In a little table, and I thought for about 5 seconds that I should bring that chair. And I'm like, no, because I don't know how long they're going to let us have them. They're going to make us get rid of them sometime before the panel starts. And, you know, that just seemed like it was going to be a pain in the ass. So that was my first mistake, made before I even left the house, because I left the chair here, which I shouldn't have done.
Wow, okay.
The second mistake was that after I went down to the line at 6:45 and saw all of these people, I immediately ran back to the hotel room, got my bag and stuff, and what I should have done was stolen a couple of the pillows out of the hotel room and brought them with me.
Right.
But I wasn't thinking, and I got in the line, and I'm like, oh, there's, you know, I'm cool, you know, I'll definitely be able to get in. And again, I'm like, maybe I should run back to the hotel room and get a couple more things and come back to the line. But I didn't. So I didn't have a chair, which everybody had. And, I know there's been some pictures that were circulating. Yeah. But, I mean, people were camping. There were cribs in this area that we were, you know, herded in, waiting in line. Like, people had small children and had brought cribs and set them up, you know, in these pens. And, wow, you know, they were basically having like a picnic in the line. And it's right, like, so right. I could have brought my chair. I could have brought my pillow. So I wasn't trying to just sleep on the concrete floor like a fool. So I made a lot of mistakes, but I had my iPad. I had my phone. I watched Arrow and the Flash on my phone through Hulu.
Nice.
I read a bunch of stuff. I didn't sleep at all.
Right.
I think I slept probably about an hour and a half. And so the next morning, they started handing out the wristbands at 6 in the morning. The panel's at 10. So they start handing the wristbands out at 6. And they hand out the wristbands, right? And to do that, they like herd us all together. Right. And so because before all night, everybody like had their own space. You know, everyone was allowed to take up enough space for them to kind of sit down and lay down.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, we weren't all like, you know, laying on top of each other like some kind of weird slumber party. So they come around with these wristbands at 6. And it's like, once we put the band on you, you can't get out of line. So a half an hour before they put the bands on is when they told everybody to go get rid of their chairs and their cribs and stuff. So people were running back up to their hotel rooms and their cars to get rid of all of this, you know, camping gear, you know, and running back downstairs and getting back in line before they put these wristbands on us. And they put the bands on us, and then they basically kind of, so then we just kind of stand there for like 3.5 hours, and we're standing like on top of each other. So now it's getting hot, and now
right,
it's getting to
right.
that point where it's like, man, why did I stand out here all night? This seems like a really bad idea now. I don't know. So anyway, so by the time they get us into the, you know, into position to go in the meeting room, like, everybody is, like dead tired, you know, just a bunch of sleep-deprived people that are standing around on top of each other wondering why we love Star Wars so much that we would subject ourselves to this. So once we actually, you know, once I got in the room, you know, once I got in the actual like panel room, like all I wanted to do was just sit down. I'm going to be the thing that I'm most excited about right now is just sitting down. So they got us in about maybe 20 minutes before the panel started. Everybody sat down. You know, there was a DJ who was doing all of these strange mixes. He was like mixing like the Imperial March and the like Turn Down for What and all sorts of like, No. He actually did that. It was awesome.
But, oh, okay.
So, you know, everybody sits down and starts getting settled and, you know, relaxing. And you can feel it. You can feel like you can feel it building. Like the closer we get to 10 o'clock, you know, you're like, oh man, this is going to happen. Oh man. So, you know, it gets to be 10, you know, the guy from EW who was kind of emceeing the whole thing comes out. And first, JJ and Kathleen came out first by themselves and, you know, pretending like they were by themselves, even though no one really believed them. And so they came out and the place just went just berserk, just absolute, you know, just absolutely crazy. You know, you had all these people. We've been standing out there for so long. JJ and Kathleen had they bought like 100 pizzas and sent the pizzas, you know, to to the line so people would have something to eat, even though there was like a little concession stand area down there. You know, the area that they had us pinned in was very you know, they were ready for us, basically. Let's just say it like that.
Right.
Gotcha. But so JJ and Kathleen come out and we're all going berserk. Like, I don't know, like I shared the kind of like Star Wars Celebration thank you video, and if you watch it really closely, like I'm in it for like a second and a half, and that was when, I can't remember if it was when JJ came out or when Boyega and them came out, but anyway, so JJ and Kathleen come out and people are going crazy and they're kind of building us up, and they start showing photos, like behind the scenes photos from the shooting, like things people haven't seen before, like new shots of, you know, Boyega and Daisy Ridley and Oscar Isaac in his X-Wing flight suit and, you know, them on the scene and filming in the desert. And, you know, he revealed that the new planet that we saw in the first teaser trailer was a planet named Jakku, that it wasn't actually Tatooine. And people were very, you know, excited about that because we all just naturally assumed that it was Tatooine, which, that he wanted us to. So anyway, they do their little thing and then they bring the droids out. Like they showed off BB-8,
that was very cool.
Yes, it was super cool, and it's super cool that they actually made him. JJ was saying that was when they were talking to him about doing it, and he was kind of going back and forth. He said, "Look, if we're gonna do it, you know, we need to do it like the original trilogy. We need to figure out a way to build sets. Like we want, you know, I want it to feel." Like this stuff is real. Like I don't want to just green screen everything. And so you really got you can really get that if you just kind of look at the trailers and look at some of the stills and stuff, that it was very important to them that they didn't just, you know, CG everything. You know, you can tell it feels a lot more, you know, tactile already than some of the prequel stuff did.
Doesn't look like a video game.
Right. So, we're starting to get hype, you know. Thankfully, he told us that there was going to be some footage later on, because I guess he just didn't want people sitting there, like, wondering, like, are we actually going to see something? You know, he let it slip that, you know, we would see more of Jakku shortly. And so then they brought the droids out, and that was super cool to actually see, like, BB-8 and R2-D2, like, on the stage, you know, together, like, interacting. And then they brought the actors out. You know, they brought the new crew out.
Yeah, yeah.
Boyega and Ridley and Oscar Isaac.
Let me ask you, is she as cute in person as she seems?
She is. She is. She looks so cute. When I see her and Boyega, it's like I'm trying to figure out if they're together or if they're just...
Yeah, the rumor is they're going to have a romance, which is going to be awesome.
No. I mean in real life. I mean...
Oh, really?
In real life, it kind of seems like they might be dating or... I don't know. It's hard to tell. But something that was very exciting for me is that, you know, I know that a lot of people, you know, when that first teaser trailer came out, there was a lot of nonsense, you know.
Yeah, I remember a lot of the unrest.
Right. There was a lot of white fanboy unrest because, right. You know, like the black dude was the first person you saw in the trailer. And, you know, I don't know. He was sweating. There was some reason that they were just, you know, they were beside themselves. But right. When they came out, I mean, that place just erupted. And it was something that I was very happy to see that, you know, Star Wars fans, people that actually love Star Wars and aren't, you know, about some bullshit, are right. going to have no problem watching John Boyega be one of the main characters in these right. next right. three movies. Like, that was something that it was obvious to me from being in the room that, you know, real Star Wars fans ain't talking about that shit. They're not talking about, no, where the Black Stormtrooper come from. You know, right. why is he running? What's going on?
Right, you know? Right, exactly.
I mean, the response that they got when they stepped out on the stage, it just really made me, you know, it made me hopeful, you know, in some way that people that really care about this stuff don't care about that stuff. So they came out and, you know, they kind of, you know, worked the crowd up. It was great. They showed some more stills. And then the originals came out. And yep. So, you know, I think most people were expecting, you know, I personally was expecting for, you know, the new kids to be there. But I didn't know that all of the, you know, pretty much all of the originals minus Harrison. You know,
right.
actually,
because he's hurt. Right.
Yeah. And they actually kind of like updated Star Wars Nation on his condition. They're like, he's doing very well, and you know, he's anxious to get out and talk about the movie, and he'll be able to do that. He should be fully recovered by then, and so it was just really great. It was the whole just the atmosphere. And the vibe in the room was just amazing. And, you know, and like I said, once it started, I was like, oh, man, this was worth it.
Right.
And we hadn't even gotten to the really cool part yet. Just the kind of, you know, being able to having them, like, interact with the fans and stuff was just, you know, was just really cool. Like, Mark Hamill looks like really good. Like, he's been, right. he's been working out for the last 2 years or something, you know, cause, you know, Hamill had gotten his voice actor, you know, like body type.
Right.
And,
exactly.
He looks really good now, especially compared to, you know, how he looked 3 or 4 years ago. So it was, you know, it was great seeing them all together, and, you know, they took a big group photo, and they did the whole thing, and then, like, all of the actors kind of, like, left the stage, and then it was just JJ and Kathleen, and he's like, oh, yeah, you know, who wants to see some new footage? And then him and Kathleen just kind of run off the stage.
Right. And, yeah, I saw that part. Yeah, that's what I was waiting for.
Yeah, and they showed that trailer. And first of all, they showed it twice. Because the first time, we were all screaming through the trailer, so we barely heard the dialogue being spoken. And it was kind of like it happened in waves, right? You have that, you know, the opening shot where the speeder is going past the, you know, like the down
Star Destroyer,
yeah,
right.
The down X-Wing and the Star Destroyer. And you see that, and just people just start cheering. And then Luke starts talking, and people start cheering. And so every time we saw something, you know, the crowd was just going crazy. And then once you know, once Han and Chewie showed up at the end, the place was just gone. Like, we were just all in some kind of, you know, some kind of, like, fanboy state. And it's just like, I just want to exist in this moment, you know, for the rest of the day. And so they showed it once. You know, everybody's going crazy. And then the moderator, the MC, comes out. He's like, oh, you guys need to see it again, right? And so they played it again. Right. And it was just, it was great, man. It was just hard to, it's hard to even describe, like, the feeling. It was,
right.
It was just like, yeah, this, you know, I should have done this. This was a good idea for me. Because it was just like, you know, that 12-year-old part of me, you know, like when I saw like Return of the Jedi, like it felt like there was like a piece of me that had, you know, that has just been waiting for this forever and never thought it was going to happen. And now that it is happening, it's still like a little hard to believe that it actually is. So to be able to, you know, experience that trailer and that setting, it was just, it was awesome. It was completely worth it. It was completely worth not sleeping and my, you know, my legs and my back aching and, you know, being hungry. But I mean, it was so great. And after we kind of left the room, everyone was just kind of like, wow, I just feel good right now. And then, you know, they handed us our little Force Awakens posters and stuff that, you know, I have up in my office already. And it was just great. And it was like, that's what I came to see. And I literally, like, I went and I ate lunch and then I walked around the floor for probably like an hour and a half. And then I just left, and went home. And, it was great. It was just great, man. I'll always
I wish I had a story as good as that. Because I absolutely do not. Basically, let me give everybody a backstory. I told this son of a bitch that he could crash in my place, so he didn't have to spend money on a hotel room because I'm usually at work or I'm usually out doing stuff. So he could have almost had the apartment to himself. I live about a 25-minute drive from the Anaheim Convention Center, considering the fact that I live in Long Beach, which is right next to Anaheim. So that notwithstanding, I was at work in my office, and I just – when the simulcast started, I just – as amazing as it was for you to be there, whatever you were feeling – you know, you could probably cut that in half because I wasn't there, but I was every bit as excited as a person could imagine. In fact, I was the only person in my entire floor in my office at ABC, which is a very large floor, that was like, I was bouncing all over the place with everything that Kennedy and Abrams said. Then when they brought out Boyega, Ridley, and, Oscar Isaac, I was just stunned. I was like, these guys, they look great. They seem like decent people. They don't have a nasty vibe or aura around them. They seem to be actually excited to be there.
And appreciative.
They weren't going through the motions. I lapped up every second of that of the presentation, from the robot, you know, BB-8, to the whole engineering stuff they talked about, to the video game work they were talking about, all the way and up to the unveiling of the original cast. Carrie Fisher, Peter Mayhew, Anthony Daniels, and Mark Hamill all looked fantastic, especially Peter Mayhew, who had some health issues, mm-hmm. but seems to be an extremely, extremely great spirits and much better health. Mm-hmm. It was great to see him as well. I've met him several times over the years, and he's been kind and gracious every single time. Then the trailer came, and at which point I stuck my head into the hallway and just let everyone know that the Star Wars trailer was about to play. a couple of guys came and crowded around my monitor, you know, my laptop screen, and I must have – pretty much 35 seconds after that played in Anaheim, it was available on the Star Yes. Wars YouTube page.
Yeah.
And I literally watched that maybe 8 times an hour for the rest of that day because I had work to do, but I didn't get much work done. So – It was astounding. And then I realized my new fanboy crush is on Daisy Ridley, so I have to, I absolutely have to deal with that. But outside of that, I actually didn't get to Anaheim until the following day, which was Friday. Mm. Now, I left work at about 1:30 p.m., and I didn't set foot in Anaheim Convention Center until 4 o'clock.
Yes.
Because of the traffic.
I saw that, and I was like, that doesn't seem right.
Well, in theory, it's a one-hour drive from Burbank on a good day. Mm-hmm. But, man, I can tell you right now, every road in Los Angeles that day, even my famous shortcuts, every road was backed up just because I wanted to get to Star Wars Celebration. The universe knew that Brandon Easton wanted to go to the Celebration, but and the universe stopped, but I did not stop. I just kept plowing ahead, and I eventually got to Anaheim Convention Center. Now, I tell you, I stepped inside, and I tell you, the first time I ever went to San Diego Comic-Con was the summer of 99.
Okay.
And the first time, and I've said this before many times, and I stepped into that, to the San Diego Convention Center that day, and it blew my, I mean, everything I'd ever loved was in one under one roof. I mean, not everybody can say that if you're not talking about your family. You know, literally everything I ever cared about, Star Wars, Robotech, Voltron, Spider-Man, Superman, X-Men, every giant robot, anything. It was all in one place in San Diego in 1999. Well, I'll say this much. As far as my Star Wars loving career goes, everything I ever cared about was under that roof in Anaheim. Yeah. I saw every toy I'd ever wanted but could not afford. I saw every piece of jewelry that I would never wear but I'd buy. And I did. I spent so much money at that convention that, you know, I literally went broke last week. Like, I'm living on fumes right now.
I'm trying to get to that next check because
of celebration. Which is exactly, because I had a paycheck that I would kind of be like, yeah, you know what? I have a tax bill. But and I'll get rid of that. But then, you know, I have a little bit of money to spend in Star Wars. Man, I got on that floor and I walked around it twice, just taking pictures and just absorbing everything. Then I got into the Star Wars Celebration merchandise. I guess you call that a stable.
Yeah.
It felt like it was a horse stable, the way that they pinned us in. And basically, for those who did not get the chance to go, they had this bizarre system where you had to get in a line in order to get into a line.
Right.
It was the weirdest damn thing I'd ever seen.
I stood in that line for about a half an hour, and then I left.
Dude, I picked up a bunch of stuff, a lot of stuff, got in line, and even though I stepped foot in there at 4, I got to that line at 4:30, and I wasn't done in that line until 5:30, and I paid for all my stuff at 5:30. So I actually spent more time waiting in the line than I did at the entire convention that day. But after that, it was just a glorious moment. I mean, I went on Friday, as I said, and I met a couple of people I knew online. I found a dude who I'd known from years ago. I actually ran into an old friend of mine on the floor, and he said, "Hey, did you find the booth with all the books?" And I'm like, "What booth with all the books?"
Oh, the Del Rey booth?
It wasn't the Del Rey booth. It was the Mysterious Galaxy booth.
Oh, okay.
They were the ones who had shit that hadn't been released yet.
Okay.
I don't know how they got it, but they had it. So I picked up Lords of the Sith. I picked up the Luke Skywalker story, that the one that he narrated. Mm. I picked up this massive Star Wars encyclopedia that's brand new,
includes... That was an exclusive at the show. Like, that actually doesn't come out for, I think, another week or so.
Well, goddamn it, I had it. And I bought it, and I had a great time reading that book. Every moment. I mean, it's like about 400 or 500 pages. I just kept flipping through it. Mm-hmm. It was just a beautiful, incredibly well put together book. I didn't really get the chance to. I didn't do any autographs. I normally don't anyway. Mm-hmm. I walked around the autograph section just to see what these people look like, mm-hmm. and it was a pleasure to see Carrie Fisher, who looks amazing for her age, mm-hmm. and you know her drug past. So you know she could look a lot worse. She was pretty cute. I was very shocked. And I saw a lot of people. And you always see the regulars, like the guy who played, the young Boba Fett, Daniel Logan. You see him.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
See Ray Park. I met him a couple times in the past. I met the guy who played the original Boba Fett, Jeremy Bullock, or something like that. But I got to finally meet Admiral Akbar. He was awesome, and that was pretty cool. And then after that, I just went over to the Star Wars Battlefront display, which was probably the longest line in the entire building, because there's a brand new Xbox One, PS4 Star Wars game, first person shooter. It's the newest one in the series, and they showed 5 minutes of actual gameplay, which blew my socks off.
Yes.
I mean, I was just sitting there, and I thought to myself, you know, I don't play video games like I used to.
No, because I don't have time.
I'm getting old.
I feel old, too. Like, I feel like it's hard for me to, like, control.
Yeah, like, it's hard, man.
First-person shooters now.
I mean, I've gotten to the point where I'm really happy watching video of video games. I don't have to play them anymore. I just like to look at how other people play them.
Uh-huh.
And I'm getting to that point. And I did reserve Star Wars Battlefront on the Xbox One because, you know, the game looks gorgeous and I have to play it. And it's not going to hurt. It's not going to mess up my fingers too much if I try to play it. So.
And you get the Battle of Jakku.
The preload.
You
and
you get a week early.
You get some special weapons and vehicles.
Yep.
So I'm pretty happy about that. And to kind of wrap up, you know, because we're running a little bit long now, to kind of wrap up my Star Wars Celebration experience, you know, I went down there, had a really great time, and I ran into some old friends, had a few drinks. It was great to be able to drink and have Star Wars in the same hand. I just had a really great time. It did not feel uncomfortable. It didn't feel rude. There was nobody being a jerk that I could see or hear about. The police was nice. The security weren't jerky like they usually are at Anaheim Convention Center. It was a really fantastic, fun experience where the only gripe I had is the length of the lines. Other than that, it was a fantastic experience, and I had access to stuff that I'd always wanted to buy but never did.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that I saw that I think that there's something about touching things and seeing them that makes a big difference in purchasing. I mean, I've seen all this stuff online over the years, but it's something about being able to just touch it that online shopping can never, ever replicate. And it was good to, like, talk to dealers. I really like to support retailers because I know how hard it is in the 21st century to own a brick-and-mortar shop. So I try to support retailers who aren't jerks. And it was a good time. I mean, the only thing that I'd walked out that I wish I had found was the anthology soundtrack collection that had all 6 full soundtracks.
Okay.
I was not able to find. I know it was there somewhere because I saw someone with it, but I couldn't find it, and I got tired because, as you know, it was crowded.
Yeah.
And after making about, I think on my 4th circle, I really started to get tired, and I really started to feel not so good. You start getting that convention sweat.
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about? And anybody out there, it's that point when you're dehydrated but you're sweating, and that's bad, and you start to feel a little bit weak, and you start to feel like you have to sit down and have a Gatorade or have some water. And I, at that point, I had been there 2.5 hours, and it was time for me to get back on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And all in all, it was one of the best experiences I've had at a convention in a very long time. And I do have to say that WonderCon 2015 was exceptional.
Cool.
And to have WonderCon be fantastic and turn around and have Star Wars Celebration to be just as good, if not better in some levels except for the lines, it was a great time. And that's all I got to say about that. You know,
cool.
And do we have enough time to talk about Daredevil? Oh, no, we got to talk about the trailer first, yeah. So, to jump on that real quick, I mean, they showed a lot. They showed a lot without showing too much, which has been J.J. Abrams' style of trailer cutting.
Yes, and mystery box.
Yeah, I really enjoy that. I've seen online on IGN and a few other sites where people, you know, inch by inch break down every image in the trailer.
Yeah, I think that's obnoxious, but
it's a waste of time because you don't know what you're seeing.
Right.
You just don't know. All I can say is, you know, standout moments where, you know, the X-Wing, it looks like they're having a race. They're having a good time. The X-Wing race over the lake, which looks like Naboo, but might not be Naboo. Mm-hmm. You know, I really like the scene where Daisy really sticks out her hand for Boyega and he takes it, you know, reluctantly.
Yeah, I love that, that moment of hesitation.
Oh, it's a great moment. Dramatically.
Yes.
I love Luke's voiceover from Return of the Jedi. I love seeing Luke in a hood. I love seeing Vader's burnt out mask, which is a great image.
Yes.
That's an astounding image. It was really beautiful to see this new shiny stormtrooper armor, which I've never seen before. I'm like, what is this? It's like this platinum armor. I mean, this looks great.
Oh, yeah, the chrome trooper. Oh
my God. And there's two shots that I really want to talk about, and I'm not talking about the Millennium Falcon stuff. There's a shot when the stormtroopers are on some ice planet, and they all turn around. And if you look closely, there's a lone figure on a raised platform far in the background.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And everyone is wondering who the hell is on that platform. You know, some say it's Gwendolyn Christie, who plays Brienne of Tarth on Game of Thrones, and some say Gwendolyn Christie is the one in the chrome armor you see walking through the cave. So we don't know who any of these people are. All we know is we got to see Kylo Ren, who is the bad guy.
Yes.
And incidentally, that armor is very similar to Darth Revan from the Knights of the Old Republic video game and novel universe.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who's ever played those games knows how vital and important Darth Revan is to the entire Star Wars mythos.
Yeah, I mean, I really like, you know, I know that there's, you know, there's a lot of fans that are just going to, you know, swear blood vendetta forever because the expanded universe, you know, kind of doesn't exist. I mean, none of this shit exists, but, you know, there's a lot of people that were really into the books and really into the games, and they're really upset that all of this stuff is being erased. But, you know, I think that there's going to be a lot of things that they pick out of the expanded universe and use, whether it's designs or whether it's character types. And I think that people just, you know, as with anything, you just have to be patient and see, you know, what they're going to do with it. Because some of this stuff that people are really upset about may actually, you know, come around, maybe in a slightly different form than it was in some of the books. But, I mean, I just, you know, visually, I loved everything I saw. I mean, that shot of the Star Destroyer,
you know,
to me, it was just like, you know, they could have just, you know, ended it right there and I would have been fine. I'm glad that they didn't. But to just see that and what we assume, you know, is Luke Skywalker and his, you know, his new cool robot hand. There was just so much great stuff in it. And I really think that kind of like I think that the whole J.J. Abrams mystery box shit is going to work very well for this movie, because there was something else where the trailer was kind of one piece of things that were revealed. The right. other piece was that costume gallery that they hid up on the second floor that had, you know, that had a lot of the new costumes from The Force Awakens and little descriptions of things that basically kind of give you clues, you know, about some of the things that might be going on in this, you know, in kind of like this new age of Star Wars. And that stuff that's classic J.J. Abrams stuff.
Well,
you know,
now that you mention that, you know, we can say that the Empire is no longer called the Empire.
Right. They're First Order.
They are called the First Order, which 65 more, they'll have Order 66, you know.
Right.
So.
Right.
So, but the reality is, there's a lot of little hints. I'm not going to ruin too much more because you can look it up yourself, or just wait till the movie comes out.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the trailer was gorgeous, and of course, seeing Han and Chewie at the end was the final button that just brought it all home for all of us. I do believe wholeheartedly that the children of the 70s and 80s were the ones who for whom that trailer will have the greatest impact.
Yes.
Nothing against the millennials or the young kids who got into the prequels. God bless you. There's nothing. There's nothing wrong with you. You're fine. But to have been a part of the original Star Wars generation, that is something that will never happen again. We will never have any type of movie experience on an innocent original level like we had as Star Wars fans.
Right.
I mean, it was a time when there was no media oversaturation.
No.
And to see a movie meant you had to get off your ass and go to the movies. There was no downloading. There was no bootlegs. You had to go to the movies.
There weren't 18 trailers. There weren't behind the scenes featurettes
on HBO. Right. No, it was nothing.
You didn't know the entire cast of the movie before they even shot a frame of it.
There you go. And that will never happen again. So I do believe, just like the Star Trek generation had Star Trek, just like the Lone Ranger generation had the Lone Ranger and Flash Gordon and Zorro, you know, we've had Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And to see Han and Chewie together again, hopefully for not the last time, but we don't know, it was just a great moment. And I didn't cry. A lot of people did.
Yeah.
But it just felt like, and I'll tell you a quick little story before we move on. When I saw Star Wars Episode III, I actually took the day off in New York back in 2005. I was teaching. Mm-hmm. And I just said, you know what? I'm not even going to rush. I'm going to just take the whole day off. Me and this guy I know from Boston, we've known each other for like damn near 15 years now. We saw every one of the prequels together on opening day. Uh-huh. It was kind of a tradition. So as Episode III ended, and we stayed there to the end of the credits, I turned to him and said, well, it looks like our childhood has just ended. I didn't mean it in a bad way. It just meant that it was time to put away childish things. And I just felt, well, you know what? There's never going to be any more Star Wars. We got everything we could have imagined from that trilogy, and now, you know, Sextology. That's it. You know, let's move on. Clone Wars came out. Saw it in the theaters when they released it as a 90-minute movie.
Uh-huh.
I thought, all right, whatever. That's not exactly the original experience, but it's great to see more Star Wars on a big screen. But then eventually, I hear that Lucasfilm is being purchased by Disney, and I think, oh, well, you know, who knows what's going to happen. Then I end up working at Disney, which is I'm still shocked about.
You never know.
So
Chris Rock said, because you never know.
Whoever you hate going to end up in your family. Anyway, so then suddenly flash forward to like about 2 weeks ago, and there's a new Star Wars trailer continuing the adventures that I thought I'd left behind originally in 1983 and then a second time in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that they say that you can't go home again, but you actually can. You just have to be willing to grow up alongside it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I feel about that. And speaking of home, and I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, everybody knows I was born and raised in Baltimore, Maryland. And anybody with half a brain or access to internet or any media knows that Baltimore is currently in a state of emergency because of the death of another unarmed black male at the hands of police officers. Freddie Gray, rest in peace. I was born and raised in Baltimore. I saw the Star Wars trilogy at a local theater in a black neighborhood in Baltimore. I grew up in a city where there's a black upper class, a black middle class, and a black lower class all on the same street. The crack years did tremendous damage, and the drug war has done tremendous damage to the people and the city of Baltimore. This has been well documented by the brilliant writer and filmmaker David Simon. However, I want to say briefly that the people of Baltimore are a strong people. They're a good people. And it is one of the few American cities where blacks and whites still work together every day. And one of the things that the media didn't show you was all the people the next morning after their initial uprising cleaning up their streets together. The media has not shown you the fact that it turned into a impromptu marching band parade in that same area, just extolling positive vibes. I think back to when I saw Star Wars as a child and the Baltimore that existed then. It's gone. But after this, I think that Baltimore might come back because it's time for change. It's a revolution happening in Baltimore right now. Baltimore is not a city where you can kill a black person and get away with it. I've told people how unique and different Baltimore City is to every other city in the United States of America. And now the whole world knows what I'm talking about. So God bless you, people. God bless my people, my family. And I'm with you, even though I'm 3,000 miles away. And one day I will return to Baltimore and help rebuild any way I can. But I'm on a different path now. So I just wanted to throw my solidarity 1,000% behind the men and women of Baltimore City.
All right, man. That's real. That's real. That's like wow. I was like, how do we follow that up now?
Yeah. Well, somebody said, I love Baltimore like Daredevil loves Hell's Kitchen.
Right. So that's how we'll segue into the next thing. I guess that's what I was thinking of when you said that you'll return to Baltimore and yeah. Do whatever you can to help it, which I think is, you know, a perfect segue into our other topic of the week. Daredevil on Netflix.
I'm not fighting Vincent D'Onofrio though. That dude's insane.
Yes. Hopefully a lot of you have checked out at least a little of it. Thankfully I had enough time to kind of like binge watch the entire thing over the course of a weekend, and I thought, and I still think that show will, you know, down the line, long term, that Daredevil show will be just as important to Marvel Studios as the original Iron Man movie was.
And you would be 100% correct.
That is how important and that is how relevant I think that show will be seen 10 years from now. I know that there was a lot of excitement. I was personally very excited when Marvel and Netflix announced this, you know, this kind of a respective deal. The 4-13 episode shows culminating in a crossover series called The Defenders.
Yep.
I thought that it was just a very good. I thought it was a very good kind of look for them. I am not. I'm not really enjoying Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm trying to. But everything that I kind of dislike, everything that kind of bugs me about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was sufficiently addressed and taken to, like, you know, the thousandth place by Daredevil. It was dark. It was, you know, it was dark without being, you know, it skirted that line. You know, it was dark without being kind of depressing or overwhelmingly cynical. I mean, even Wilson Fisk wholeheartedly believes that the things that he's doing is going to save his neighborhood and thereby right. his city. And I thought again, the casting was excellent, you know, from top to bottom. From Charlie Cox, Vincent D'Onofrio, I keep forgetting the cat that played Foggy.
I don't know his name. I've seen his face. I just have no idea who that guy is.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen him in a couple things. I think he was actually the last thing I saw him in. He was in part one of Mockingjay. But I don't think that's the only thing that I think he's the guy that like doesn't speak. I think they like, you know, the Capitol cut his tongue out or something awful. But anyway, the cast, you know, Rosario Dawson, Vondi Curtis Hall. I mean, it was amazing from top to bottom. I thought the action choreography and the stunt work was supreme.
Yeah.
To me, the thing that I love is that, you know, Matt was always getting his ass kicked.
Yep.
You know, he was always getting beat up and he was always getting back up. And going back out there and finishing the job. And to me, that felt to me, that's the essence of Daredevil. That is the essence of Matt Murdock, and they completely nailed that, you know, all throughout. And I just, you know, I thought it was amazing. And I was so, I'm so ready for season two of Daredevil, which has already been announced. And I'm so ready for this next, you know, this next wave for Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. And props to Marvel for finding a talented, experienced, gifted black showrunner for Luke Cage. I mean, I assumed that they were going to do that, but I was very pleased to see that they pulled the trigger on that. And they're just, you know, this series was really important for them for a lot of reasons. This was the first one out the gate. And because of that awful Ben Affleck movie, you know, that's what the mainstream knew of Daredevil before this. And to take that kind of preconception of what Daredevil is and spin it in this direction, I think it's just, it's so amazing. And, you know, the good, all of the, I don't want to say all of the best, but a lot of the great storytelling and entertainment is happening on television now. I mean, there's more space, there's more opportunity, you know, for, you know, really great, deep, you know, storytelling to happen where you don't have to get in and out of this movie in 2.5 hours if you're lucky. And I think they really took great advantage of the format. And I'm super excited to see, you know, the next set, you know, more Daredevil and more other stuff. And I think it's going to be very, very important for them going forward, because there are so many great Marvel characters that probably can't hold on to a movie, that can't support like a blockbuster thing, which is what Marvel Studios has quickly become. But there's a lot of really cool kind of grounded characters that I think would be perfect for this approach. And, you know, from all indications, Marvel's Daredevil is one of the most popular shows on the Netflix service now. So this is a, you know, this is probably an arrangement or a relationship that is only now beginning, that will be going on for a very long time. And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, man, you said it all, bro. I mean, it was such an epic on a small screen. It felt like a 13-part movie stretched across, you know, those 13 episodes on Netflix. The one thing that really stood out to me, and speaking as a Catholic, was how Catholicism was a source of strength. And it wasn't a typical evil Catholic people doing something.
Right.
You know,
evil priest.
Or evil priest for that matter. It was very refreshing to see that. And you don't really get a chance to see or hear that kind of thing in pop culture nowadays, because it's so easy to dismiss religion. But if you use religion as a source of strength without pontificating, that's a great way to get your message across. And I think the creators and the writers of the Daredevil series did an amazing job balancing every aspect of Matt Murdock's existence, from being a lawyer to being a crusader to being someone who lost his dad to being someone who was seeking a new dad and a new father figure in a figure of Stick to losing that. You got to see how similar both Wilson Fisk and Matt Murdock were in terms of what they lost and how much they suffered to get to the point they are in at the beginning of the series. Mm-hmm. I think the supporting cast was really the thing that held this thing together. I mean, seeing Von D. Curtis Hall in anything is great. Yes. That brother does not get enough work. He is an astounding actor, did a great job at Ben Urich. And I always felt that Ben Urich was probably one of the best, I think, third tier characters in the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. You know, he's someone that only Marvel people know. And that's right. like a very small tier.
Right.
You know, he's alongside Liz Allen and Betty Brant. You know,
right.
At the Daily Bugle. Oh, Gloria. Yeah. You know, the Daily. We're, by the way, we're referring to the staff of employees at the Daily Bugle, which started in the Spider-Man comics but bled over to Daredevil in the 80s and also started to encompass Damage Control and other stuff later on in the Marvel Universe. In fact, the Daily Bugle and J. Jonah Jameson became a multimedia force in the modern Marvel Universe, which is pretty interesting.
Yes.
So then you get to the cast of Rogues, which you had Madame Gao, you had Nobu, and you had two generic Russian gangsters, and you had Wesley, as well as the Owl, Leland Owlsley, who, that's a definite inside baseball reference.
Yes, it is. Because it's like nobody knows who Leland Owlsley is.
Exactly. But that guy played him perfectly.
Uh-huh.
I mean, good Lord. And the guy who played Wesley was played, I think he's Mr. No, he's not Mr. Fantastic, is he?
No, they do look a little similar, though.
They do look similar, right. But whoever played Wesley, I mean, good God, that was perfect.
Yep.
And then you had, of course, D'Onofrio as Fisk.
Oh, and Vanessa.
And the woman who played Vanessa, she was everything she needed to be.
Yep.
That was just, I mean.
It's like, who thought that there was going to be a love story in this
On that level, where you see a monster is scared to talk to a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see someone who is one of the most vicious, vile human beings alive, but he fell to pieces when talking to Vanessa.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see why that poster, I mean, why that painting meant something.
Oh, that was awesome.
I mean, Jesus Christ.
And then they brought it back around at the end where the final shot of the prison cell looked almost just exactly like it.
Man, that was good stuff. And I walked away from that just thinking, you know what? Marvel has got what it takes to keep moving on. And this parallel Netflix universe is the perfect place to tell the stories, because now you have the opportunity to bring in probably the character that Netflix was made for, which is the Punisher.
Yep.
Because I've said this and we've talked about this. If you really want the Punisher, you need a long story of pure vengeance. There's no backstory. It's basically Frank Castle is going to kill you because you're a criminal.
Yep.
And the story is about the people who he's going to save. The story is about the people he's going to kill. The Punisher is a force of nature, almost like Galactus or like a hurricane.
Yep.
You can't stop him. You'll try. You'll batten down the hatches, but he's going to get you. And that's how the Punisher story should be told. The Punisher, you don't need anything about him. You know, he's going to kill you. That's all you need to know. And that's how I look at it. Now, one thing I wanted to say, and I wanted to address this because this came up right after Daredevil was finished, is how people are using Daredevil to trash Arrow. And I'm thinking to myself, you guys are fucking stupid. I have to say it again. You guys are fucking stupid. Daredevil is a 13-episode series that had an entire year lead-in of writing with a staff that came from Josh Whedon's camp.
Yes.
Okay? Arrow has very brilliant creators behind it from the DC Comics and just the movie and TV camp. Guess what? They have 24 episodes to do on a budget probably one-fourth of Daredevil's.
Right.
Every year.
So they can't afford the stunts. They can't afford the actors that Marvel can afford.
Right.
They probably can't afford, you know, like the settings or the
explosions,
the production design, anything. Right. Just like the little details.
Right. And it drives me up the wall that everything has to become this versus that. Look, Arrow's stunt team, despite being at one-fourth the budget of Daredevil's, over the course of now going into a fourth season, Arrow's stunt team has impressed me with every battle they've done. And even in Daredevil, I still would say, show me something as great as the Ra's al Ghul fight against Oliver on the top of that mountain. The way that was structured. I mean, and I'm not taking anything away from the Daredevil fight at the end of episode two.
Right.
But with how much was that on the line in that episode, and then to see Oliver die, basically, that was one of the greatest moments I've seen in superhero television, period.
Yeah.
So let's not try to play this dumb game of, oh, Daredevil's awesome. I wish Arrow could be like that.
Right.
Guess what? Arrow is like that. It's just over 24 episodes on 1/4 the budget.
You know what? Okay. It's like, I completely agree with you. And I'm like, what is everybody talking about? But I will say this. I will say this. After I saw Daredevil, I saw that week's episode of Arrow. And right. I was like, whoa. Like, I told myself that mentally I wasn't going to compare them. Like, I was telling myself, like, I'm not going to just sit down and compare them because, you know, it's unfair for all of the reasons I just said. Right. But still, that first episode post-Daredevil, I was giving them, like, a little more, like, suspicious eyebrow than I usually have. And I know that, you know, this gets into something else, and we'll talk about this later. We'll do it after Arrow Season 3 is over. We'll talk about the whole season. Because, personally, I haven't been nearly as crazy about Season 3 as I was about the past two. And I think there's a couple of different reasons for that that we'll, you know, explore later on. But I will admit that the episode of Arrow that aired like immediately after I had finished Daredevil, I was like, man, this is mad. Maybe this is just a corny episode this week, but this is like mad corny all of a sudden. The next week I was fine, but initially, days afterwards, like Arrow and The Flash, I was like, maybe I need a week or something, because this is seeming mad corny to me right now.
Well, I'll tell you this. If you look at how dark Arrow got real fast, you know, I mean, obviously they shot those episodes way in advance, but if you notice the turn, because I think the first episode after Daredevil had finished was the one with the Suicide Squad. Am I correct?
I can't remember. I feel like it wasn't. I feel like it was one of the Ollie ones. Like,
Because I remember that I wasn't impressed by too much. Then they had the episode that ended with Ra's al Ghul slamming Thea through a glass table and then stabbing her.
Yes.
And then I thought, so this shit is getting real.
Right.
Like, they really crossed the line now. You can't go back. And then you had, Oliver admit that, you know, he could not beat Ra's al Ghul. And he basically became, you know, Al-Hasa-Shahim or whatever his name is.
Al-Sahim.
Yeah, and I just thought, okay. It went to a place, and I agree, season three of Arrow has not had the narrative thrust of season two because I felt like Oliver lost a lot more last year. Yeah. I think what season three really is about is the wages of dishonesty and how you have to be honest about not only your identity, but your love. Mm-hmm. Because everything that Oliver cares about is being systematically destroyed by the fact that he is the Arrow. And suddenly he has to lose that identity and lose himself to really find who he is. And it's going to be interesting to see how he eventually does become Green Arrow, because I do hear eventually he's going to get that name.
I would assume he will. I think that this season is going to be a big kind of turn in that direction. And I don't know if you know, but the name of the last episode of this season, the title of the episode is My Name is Oliver Queen. So,
wow, nice.
So that, you know, when I heard that, I was like, oh, okay, I think I know where they're going with it. But, like you were saying, it's okay to love Daredevil and Arrow and The Flash. And I haven't checked it out yet, but I know some people like iZombie. It's okay to like different shows based on different comics at the same time. Like, you don't have to, you know, always set them in opposition, you know, against each other, which is kind of like the thing where, you know, it's like, oh yeah, the Force Awakens trailer was so much better than Batman versus Superman. It was like, yeah, it was, but, you know, Batman versus Superman is coming out later than Star Wars. So, you know, it's just kind of one of those things, you know. To me, I always want to allow myself to like and enjoy different things for different reasons without getting too caught up in, you know, what's better, who did it better, who had the coolest stunt. You know, it's hard to do that because
it's about story.
It's natural. It's natural, but you have to let things be what they are instead of trying to, you know, make everything the same.
Right.
So, I think that's pretty much all I got. I mean, Daredevil's amazing. If you have Netflix, watch it. You don't have to watch it all, you know, in a weekend like crazy people, like some of us did. But,
right.
You know, you don't have to watch all 13 episodes in 2 days. But, you know, I thought it was a tremendous piece of work. And I was so excited when they announced that D'Onofrio was playing Wilson Fisk, and he was every bit as amazing as I thought he would be. And every piece of Wilson Fisk and the things that make him who he is were all on display. They were all richly developed. I love the fact that, you know, I'm sorry, this is a small spoiler, but Wilson Fisk doesn't actually show up on screen until a couple episodes in. I won't tell you where he is, but, you know, for the first, the first few episodes of it, you know, he's kind of like the boogeyman. Like, he's mentioned, you hear his voice, but then when we finally see him, it's like, we're so ready to learn about this character. And the way, the life that Vincent brought to him, and the actress that played Vanessa. I mean, it was so, I never thought that there was going to be, you know, a love story in the middle of this show. And it was such a misdirection, because if there was something, I thought it was going to be between Matt and Karen, which we actually didn't get that much of. There was a little kind of, you know, pining for him, but, you know, the core love story in the middle of the series was about Wilson Fisk, and Wilson Fisk's, his most violent outburst in the entire series is about that relationship and his feelings about what might have happened to it based on what someone does. So, I highly, highly recommended. And it's going to be just as important as that first Iron Man movie.
And yeah, I mean, Brandon's right. I mean, it was great. I loved every second of it. Every performance was on. There was not a weak link anywhere to be seen. And it is 1,000% worth your time. And if you don't have a Netflix account, ask a friend for a password, or just cough up the $8. It's definitely worth it.
Yes, or as I recommend it to a friend, you get Netflix for the free trial, and then you can watch Daredevil, and then you can cancel it if you don't want to see anything else.
This is true. That is very true.
I think you have 2 weeks or you have a month. So, you know, not that I'm not advocating that, but if someone was interested in something like that, it's possible.
Gotcha.
So, but I think that's it for now, guys. Thank you for listening to another one of these. And The Force Awakens is coming, and that just gives me just a great feeling inside. You know, anytime I'm kind of I'm writing a script and I feel like I don't know what I'm doing, or I did something stupid or made a mistake, or I'm rewriting a scene that I thought was done the day before, I just go and I just watch that trailer and I'm like, oh, okay, all right. Well, at least The Force Awakens is coming out, so I'll figure it out. As long as I can get to December, I'm good.
And real quick, I wanted to give a shout out to a friend of ours named Robert Roach, who has a Kickstarter going on right now for his book, Mentu. I think by the time this goes up, unfortunately, it will be too late. But I just want to... Yeah, almost, because it might still be going on the Monday when this is going up.
Yeah.
So I really hope that you guys could take a look at it, and we'll just keep going from there.
Yep. Well, all right, guys. We will see you next time. Next time, Avengers, promise.
Awesome.
All right.
Take care.
Peace.